TheBook.com.
Hello, once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Monday, May 16th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, kicking off a new week here in style with a very big show coming your way. Be joined here in a few seconds by Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. We'll talk the two NBA Conference Finals series, and we'll also talk about the College Football Games of the Year that came out at South Point in Las Vegas. Just a little bit of a hop, skip, and a jump from the Strip, but they came out with several college football lines, so we'll go over some of those with Brad. Also be joined by Austin Peters of Upside Motor in the second half of today's show, Cole Ryan's Monday edition of Betting the Buckets. I'll work in some MLB and some NHL playoffs analysis here as we go throughout the show. So definitely a lot of things coming your way here to kick off this week. Looking ahead, hoping to have Wes Reynolds join us on Wednesday with some analysis of the AT&T Byron Nelson, also the Irish Open. That's the European Tour event this week. On Thursday, hoping to get Keeneland Dan back on the show for some Preakness coverage, the second leg of the Triple Crown here at Pimlico coming up this upcoming weekend. And then we also got, we'll have appearances from Donnie Kolakowski. That's on tomorrow's show. Philip Rossenreich of Orlando Magic Daily will also join us to talk about the NBA playoffs, also the firing of Scott Skiles, or the resignation of Scott Skiles, and what's going on with that whole situation. So we'll definitely have you covered here all week long on Bang the Book Radio. So make sure that you tune in for all the stuff that we have coming your way. We'll go ahead and kick things off here with Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, sir?
It's going well. Nice to hear your voice on this fine morning, Adam.
Yeah, beautiful day here, warming up a little bit. And of course, it's been a little while since we've had you on, but happy to have you kick things off here for us this week. I know college football, your bread and butter. We'll save the best for last in terms of this segment. So we'll kick things off a little bit here with a look at the NBA playoffs, the two conference finals series. Things get underway tonight with Oklahoma City and Golden State. Are you surprised to see the Thunder here in this conference final?
Yeah, I mean, particularly after game one against San Antonio when they lost by 30-plus points. I mean, the fact that they were able to beat San Antonio four out of five games, including two on the road in San Antonio against the Spurs team that had only lost one home game the entire season. Yeah, I'm pretty surprised, to say the least. Now, I mean, I thought that to begin with, the San Antonio OKC would be a great series, probably go six, seven games. But after seeing game one, now, I didn't necessarily overreact and say that the Spurs were going to blow them out in every single game. But to win four out of five straight up against San Antonio that really didn't show their age all season long, I mean, had it not been for Golden State's 73 wins, we'd have been talking about San Antonio as one of the best teams in the history of the NBA. They outscored their opponents by double digits on a per-game basis. Only about 10 teams in the history of the league have done that. And again, 40-1 at home. I was a little stunned to see what they were able to do in the last five games.
Well, and I think the biggest thing and the most interesting thing here heading into this series is how people are going to evaluate, you know, what Oklahoma City did. I mean, is this a situation where Oklahoma City can – you know, continue rolling that momentum forward? Are they going to run into a team that, I mean, is obviously historically good? I mean, 73 wins, no one's done that before. So yeah, that's what I want to see is how Oklahoma City can ride that momentum and what the perception is of them, particularly if they have a similar game one to what they had in the in the second round there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not necessarily big fans of the Thunder tonight. I think it's advantage Golden State if you've seen at least Golden State so far at home in the playoffs, 6-0, 5-1 against the spread. You know, Oklahoma City coming off a little bit of a longer series than Golden State. But I agree with you. And look, let's just face it. Look, what have we seen from both teams the last five games? I mean, advantage Oklahoma City, beat the Spurs four out of five games, looked good doing so, particularly they were the team that got stronger down the stretch, despite the fact many would have said coming into the playoffs the deepest rotation, the deepest team would have been the Spurs, but it was Oklahoma City dominating the fourth quarter in most of those games. Meanwhile, I mean, Golden State polished off Portland in five games, but if you watch those games game by game, I mean, you can make a case that Portland should have easily won two, maybe even three of those games. I mean, Golden State, you know, was down. It only led as far as total minutes in the entire series, I think about 47 minutes of them leading out of five games. They trailed a lot of it. Is that playing down to the level of competition? You know, some extent. You know, is it playing without Curry? A little bit there, but I wasn't – while they were able to do it in five games, it's not like they showed that they were world beaters. I thought they showed a little bit of vulnerability.
Well, and the X's and O's are going to be fascinating for this series because, obviously, for Oklahoma City, you stop one of Durant or Westbrook, you've got a good chance to win. If both of them go off and have big games, then it becomes a little bit more difficult. But it's hard for one of those two guys to, you know, consistently put the load on their shoulders and beat a Golden State team that, you know, again, as we've talked about, it had a historic regular season. And with Golden State, you know, it's very tough to defend them because they just shoot the ball so well from the perimeter, whether it's a contested shot or not. That's something Oklahoma City didn't really have to deal with San Antonio because they shot pretty poorly from the outside.
Yeah, outside of game one, San Antonio did. So it's a completely different, you know, defensive game plan that Billy Donovan's going to have to come up with. But I'll say this, I do like Oklahoma City's matchup on the boards compared to Golden State. I think they can control the boards there. And, you know, you look at Kevin Durant's performances against Golden State this year, you know, Golden State's got to find an answer for him, at least to slow him down a little bit, because they haven't even shown that they're capable of doing that. And I know Golden State's won all three matchups, but in the games this year, if you're, again, following along with those games, Oklahoma City had to lead late third quarter, early fourth quarter in almost all of those games. So it's definitely not what everyone expected. A lot of people are expecting Golden State, San Antonio, but I still think it's a tremendous matchup between the two. A lot of points going to be scored, but, you know, obviously Vegas well on top of that with one of the highest totals we've seen in the playoffs in the last five, 6 years.
I was going to ask you about that. It was a really good unintentional segue there into the total for this game. 223, 223.5, depending on where you look. I'll be really interested to see if public money comes in before tip-off and we get this thing up into the maybe 225 range. But you know, that's kind of my thought here is, you know, I mean, I'm kind of wondering if that's a pace that these two teams can set throughout the series, or if we'll see a decent adjustment maybe down in the total for game two.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's a little on the high end. Now, I'll say I don't think Vegas, you know, was on top of the Portland Golden State series. Not enough. I thought they set it too low on a per game basis. I mean, game one started out at 210, game five closed at 217, and yet four of the five games easily flew over the total, and all five should have went over. Portland couldn't score much down the stretch in the fourth quarter of game two. So, I mean, they might have overcompensated a little bit for the fact they just got taken advantage of in the last Golden State series. I mean, the two teams, though, I mean, in their defense, I mean, if you look at the matchup so far this season, I mean, all of them have been at 224 or higher, so I kind of get why it's said here, but again, this is playoff basketball, and don't undersell. I thought Oklahoma City did a reasonable good job against San Antonio's offense in the last series, and Golden State efficiency-wise was a top-five team in the league in defensive efficiency. So, you know, I would say a little bit of value, at least game one, while the two teams feel each other out, probably to the under, and we'll see what it is. I'll say this. If you would have played it early, a couple of casinos, I think, got really taken advantage of some early sharp money because there were some 231s out there at about a couple places. And, yeah, those were wrong numbers because within about a 3-4 hour period when all the casinos opened up, it was sitting at around the current 223.5 number. I agree with you. I think a public takes the over tonight, probably closed at 225.
So you said that you think Golden State's got a little bit of an advantage tonight. Is that advantage enough for them to win by eight or more?
Oh, that's the ultimate question. Yeah, I'm going to take them. I mean, they're already 6-0 straight up, 5-1 against the spread at home so far this postseason. And I mean, a couple of those are without Curry. The only one they didn't cover was the closeout against Portland in the last game. Oklahoma City, you know, been a little hit and miss as far as on the road in the playoffs. I mean, they've done better than expected. They were able to win both games in Dallas and obviously took two away from San Antonio. But it's tough getting that game one of the last series out of your mind. And I just think with them coming off a very competitive, emotional series, I think game one doesn't necessarily favor them tonight. I'll take the slight lean on Golden State minus the points. But, again, I'm never a big guy that likes to lay a lot of points.
Cavaliers, huge favorite in game one on Tuesday night, double-digit chalk, seeing 10.5 out there in the market for the books that have opened. Cavs haven't played since May 8th. Toronto had to go 7 with Miami. Miami kind of fell off the wagon there at the end. That game turned into a blowout with Toronto winning by 17. Or actually 27. When you look at this situation here with the Cavs, the long layoff, you would think it probably wouldn't hurt a team led by LeBron James, right?
No, if they were going to show that they, I agree with that. I mean, they faced a similar situation last round. Atlanta and Boston went 7 games. Cleveland had about 8 days in between the Detroit series and the Atlanta series. They come out, they're favored by 8, which was a reasonably large number. You know, they struggled in the third, early fourth quarter of that game, but still pulled away, won and covered, won by 11. No, I'm not too concerned with LeBron James and co having the focus there. I mean, the main thing is that they wanted to sweep out Atlanta. They wanted the extra rest. They want to be healthy, unlike last year. No, I don't think it's a disadvantage. But I do worry, and maybe not necessarily this series, but how can they keep up the three-point shooting pace? I mean, they've done it already through 2 series. Maybe they do it through another series, but when they're really going to need the 50% three-point shooting percentages and possibly the NBA Finals, are they going to be able to sustain that? I think that's the biggest question on the minds of Cleveland sports fans.
Well, and I think that this game is a little bit tricky for them coming up here on Tuesday night, just for the simple fact that, one of the things about having that distant shooting percentage is being able to get the repetitions. And, I mean, you can't really simulate game conditions in practice. And, Toronto is not a great defensive team by any means. And, obviously this is uncharted territory for them since they have so many playoff disappointments. So this may be a situation where Toronto is just happy to be here. And maybe that plays into the series price, also the game one line. But you do kind of wonder here if maybe it affects Toronto more in the middle games of this series, having played so much of late, whereas they may just be in that groove because they've been playing here in terms of Tuesday night's game.
Yeah, I mean, I can agree with that, though I will say, you look at Toronto hasn't performed too well so far in game one. So, I mean, they lost outright at home to Indiana in the first round as a 7-point favorite, lost outright to Miami as a favorite. So game one hasn't been kind to them. I will say, Lowry and DeRozan got things going offensively the last 3 games of the series, finally against Miami. As far as maybe points, they're still shooting percentages are still bad. Yeah, I mean, look, they're playing with house money at this point. I mean, they're the larger underdog, so that's a little bit of a unique role for them so far this postseason. But again, this is a franchise that has never been to the Eastern Conference Finals. And you're taking on Mr. Eastern Conference Finals, LeBron James. I believe it's 7 in a row now for him playing in this. So, I think they're playing with house money. And the fact that they've continued to roll along and play, it's kind of a routine for them at this point. Every other day they're playing basketball. But, again, game one, that was the case this last series against Miami. They were coming off a game 7 win against Indiana, played a couple days later against Miami, and lost the game outright at home. So, I mean, I do have some trepidation here with Toronto. The fact that they played 6 more games than a healthy and rested Cleveland team, it could get ugly. I'm just saying, I'm normally a guy that loves to take the double digits, but I just think this is a tough situation for them here in game one.
How quick is this thing over for Cleveland? I mean, do they win this in 4, 5? Does it actually go 6?
I would say that I'm going to go with 5. I mean, I do have to respect Toronto did win 2 out of 3 matchups. It's not like, Cleveland-Atlanta series where Cleveland was just, it has shown over the last 2 seasons they're just a bad matchup for Atlanta and they're just clearly the better team. I mean, Toronto should have some confidence in some big games. They won 2 of them, including one of the last meetings that was a big game. You had a playoff-type atmosphere when both teams were going for the number 1 seed in the East. They were able to pull out a win. But, yeah, I just think sooner or later, I mean, when you played back-to-back series game 7s, that's going to catch up with you. And it's not like they've looked impressive in those series. They were favored to win those series in 5-6 games. They've underperformed, including a stretch there where they didn't cover for 6 straight games. They have not been setting the world on fire. So, yeah, I think it's quick. You put a gun in my head, I'll say Cavs in 5.
Well, you've been doing a lot of stuff over on Twitter, and you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers, the number 7. He's been doing a lot of stuff looking at the small conference college football schools, the Sun Belt, And then I believe you were looking at what, Conference USA, the AAC. You've been kind of all over the map a little bit, checking out some of these teams. And, you know, we got a little bit of college football stuff to talk about here over the weekend with South Point in Las Vegas releasing their Games of the Year lines, $1,000 limits on these. What was the most surprising line to you of that group?
I do think there's some value. They also released them week one, so I'll keep that a little bit under wraps for now. I think there's some smaller colleges that just lines aren't right. But the ones that got the most attention, obviously Ohio State being a 9-point underdog to Oklahoma there in week three. I just didn't think that was the right number. Not that I think, you know, Ohio State, the game should be pick 'em, but I thought Oklahoma should be 6 or 7, and that line's already moved down from 9 to 7. Reason being, I mean, I don't know how you can make Ohio State more than a touchdown underdog. Urban Meyer 6-0 straight up, 6-0 against the spread as an underdog. So that means he's won every single game at Ohio State in Columbus as an underdog, and that would have been his largest underdog role as a head coach. You got to go all the way back to the 2003 season when he was coaching Utah as far as him being that big of an underdog. So that was a little surprise it was that high. Oklahoma should have probably been more of a 6-7 point favorite. Not surprised Pittsburgh was a 9-point favorite against Penn State. That rivalry was renewed for the first time in 16 years. Pitt's a little bit better. Game's at home, but there'll be plenty of Nittany Lion fans in the seats. And while I'm not a big fan of James Franklin by any stretch of the imagination, you know, I do like Trace McSorley. Kind of a reset button at quarterback with Hackenberg gone could be actually a positive for them. I thought Pittsburgh probably should be more like a 6-7 point favorite in that game. Again, some of the bigger money's already come in that's dropped a little bit, that line. I guess the most surprising one was, you know, it's not going to move the meter as far as radio ratings, but, you know, BYU against Utah State late in the season, BYU was only a 1-point favorite hosting Utah State. That was just a wrong line. I mean, that should have been more like a touchdown, and that was the biggest line mover that we saw in the first 24 hours. A lot of people hit that one hot and heavy. BYU now a 7-point favorite.
Yeah, I agree with you. That makes a whole lot of sense for that big BYU line move. And I know you're heading out to Vegas here in a couple days, so you'll get a chance to go hit some of these week one and also some of these games of the year, if there are some that still have value to them. But, you know, I guess without giving away too much of what you have so far from an analysis standpoint, you know, we talked a little bit about setting power ratings when we had you on the show, you know, during the last college football season. And obviously you've been hard at work at those, kind of refining those a little bit. In terms of comparing those to the numbers that we saw come out at South Point, do you feel pretty confident in the preseason work that you've done thus far?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the major line, the 4 or 5 major line moves that we saw from those all corresponded to what my numbers would represent. So that made me feel good that all the lines moved in the direction that I thought they should. Now, I'm pretty confident in the power ratings. Without releasing too much, I'll probably, you know, be a little safeguarded as far as what I release throughout the course of the summer. But, yeah, nothing really shocked me as far as the line movements. I mean, other than a couple of the lines I just thought were off by South Point, that, you know, I don't necessarily agree that Alabama's clearly the number one team coming into the country. I mean, talent-wise, they're probably there with all their recruiting classes, but it's not necessarily there at the experience level as far as the returning talent. You know, another one that I thought was off a little bit and the early line move corresponded with it. You know, Clemson opened a favorite at Florida State. I got both teams power rated evenly, and you got to give the home edge there at the Doak Campbell Stadium for Florida State. And, you know, that flipped to Florida State being favored. So, you know, I am pretty confident with the early power ratings that I've been doing right, and I do think particularly with the smaller ones, which I've been focused on here the last month, there's a tremendous amount of value if you've done your homework.
Yeah, and I agree with you about Clemson and Florida State, and that's one of the really interesting things here is, you know, obviously there are perception biases from the previous season, and you know, we talk about that Ohio State-Oklahoma game going from 9 to 7. We also saw Oklahoma and Texas on a neutral in Dallas on October 8th, go from Oklahoma minus 14 to Oklahoma minus 11.5. Now, that's obviously not a very big move, 13, the only semi-key number in that area. But, you know, it does look like the common theme here, and there was another Oklahoma line I saw that moved a little bit here in these numbers, I think. But the common theme seems to be that Oklahoma a little bit overpriced here you know, based on the numbers from South Point, which isn't going to be the same, you know, across the board, but it is always interesting to see, you know, which teams odds makers have isolated prior to the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And he did come out, the odds maker, the key guy there, Chris Andrews, came out and said that, you know, he's very forthright and said Oklahoma, he had power rated as the number two team in the country. I mean, I get it. It was a playoff team from last year. You know, the lasting memory that I had, though, was – and something you don't want to overreact to what you see in the last game, the bowl game, but, I mean, they were outclassed by Clemson. It's not like they were minus five turnovers. I mean, Clemson put the work to them in the second half of that game. And, again, the Big 12, year after year, yes, it's exciting football. Yes, there's a lot of points scored. But when it comes down to it, can those guys stop anybody on the defensive side of the ball? You know, outside of Oklahoma a couple years ago beating a disinterested Alabama team in the Sugar Bowl, where are their marquee bowl victories in the last 12, 13 years? Where are the marquee bowl victories for the entire conference? We've seen Baylor in a couple of years lose to Michigan State in a Cotton Bowl, lose to a Central Florida team in a Fiesta Bowl. You know, TCU got a big win over Ole Miss a couple of years ago. But overall, I mean, the Big 12, I just think year after year gets a little – overrated, and you know, I don't mind seeing the line moves against Oklahoma a little bit. I mean, yes, they got 14 returning starters. Yes, they return Baker Mayfield, but when I was breaking down the Clemson playoff game, I mean, just at the quarterback spot, let's just look at high school recruiting rankings. Deshaun Watson, number one in the country as far as a player, five-star elite talent. Baker Mayfield was a preferred walk-on. So, I mean, yes, recruiting rankings aren't always right all the time, but still, I like Baker Mayfield. I had a great year, but when it comes down to it against elite teams, is he an elite guy that can make plays to get a win against the likes of a Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama? I don't know if I see it, and I'll tell you what, I like the Texas move. Texas is a much better football team last year, and what happened in last year's game? I mean, Texas did beat Oklahoma outright.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, another very interesting move here, a couple of them, the Georgia Bulldogs. Now, I thought that the line with Tennessee and Georgia on October 1st was a little bit off with Georgia pick 'em at home. That one's now 1.5. The Florida-Georgia, what is it, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville. Florida was a 2.5-point dog on the updated number. They opened a 1-point dog in that one. So Georgia getting some love for that neutral site game in Jacksonville. Seems like sharp money siding with Georgia a little bit here. Also saw their number against Georgia Tech go up from 11 to 13.5. Is that a stance that you agree with?
You know, no, not necessarily. I know, you know, Mark Richt got beat up a lot with Georgia the last couple of years, but reality was they won 10 games last year, and they were fortunate to do so. I believe they won 5 games by a touchdown or less. First-year coach, I know there's a lot of excitement. Kirby Smart recruited well out of all the first-year coaches, and there's 29 of them. He had the best recruiting class as far as first year. And look, I mean, chances are maybe not at the start of the season, but by the end of the season, they might be starting a true freshman quarterback in Jacob Eason. First-year coach, never been a head coach before, a first-year freshman, true freshman quarterback in the SEC. No, I don't necessarily agree with those. Love the future of Georgia football, but I think that excitement, and they sold out their spring game and had 93,000. I think there's too much buy lights on Georgia for this first year.
Well, a lot of good stuff here. It's a bit of an introduction to the upcoming college football season. As I said, you're heading out to get some of your hard-earned money down on some of these games. I imagine you'll be moving some of those week one lines a little bit while you're out there. But anything else you want to leave our listeners with in terms of preparing for the college football season? I mean, the NBA playoffs, you know, there's only 2 series left here in the conference finals. And, of course, the finals, same thing in the NHL. A lot of people don't do a whole lot with baseball. So it's going to be about that time to start prepping for football season. You know, what would be the, you know, keys to victory, so to speak, for our listeners out there?
Yeah, I think, you know, getting as much information as possible. And look, I'm a guy that you know, I buy every single preseason college football magazine that there is, you know, even if I think some are kind of, you know, a lot less worthwhile than others. If I can just get 1 or 2 pieces of, you know, good information out of there that I can use handicapping-wise, and a lot of those preseason magazines, you know, obviously aren't focused on the against-the-spread side of things, but you can still find out just positional information. And again, I'll say this time and time again, be careful of overreacting to what you saw in the bowl game or the college football playoff. Be careful of overrating teams that return a quarterback and a running back, and be careful, not, you know, as far as teams that are underrated, look at the line of scrimmage returning experience. If a team returns all five starters on the offensive line, maybe they're a little bit inexperienced at quarterback. I mean, an offensive line that can protect a young quarterback is his best friends. And a lot of those times, those teams that have inexperienced skill position players but very experienced up front on offense and defensive lines are undervalued. So pay attention to that as you're starting to gear up for the college football season.
And whether it's college football or the NFL here on Bang the Book Radio, you're going to hear us talk about the trenches because it's absolutely one of the most important areas. And, I mean, Brad will tell you the same thing. You know, in his power ratings, a decent percentage of those composite ratings, you know, come from the trenches, from the offensive and defensive lines. So, Brad, love your work as always, man. What's going on over at the website right now?
Yeah, if you go to bradpowersports.com, right now on the website you can pre-order for the upcoming season as far as college football and the NFL, and I'll have summer editions that have, you know, as far as the season future win totals for both college and NFL coming up this summer. You can pre-order. Lowest cost you'll see all season, $75. Of course, NBA playoffs still rolling along. Just three series left if you're interested in the VIP package for NBA playoffs, $49. And then I'll say this, if you want your college football information, I've been posting up my college football previews as far as each team so far. Follow me on Twitter, at Brad Powers, the number 7. Scroll through it. I'm doing about 6-7 teams a day at this point.
Well, great stuff, man, Brad. Really appreciate it. Safe travels out there to Vegas. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me on again, Adam.
Good stuff there from Brad Powers. Love getting some college football insight here. I don't care if it's the month of May. Really, really miss college football. Definitely a very fun betting market. You know, a lot of fun games, a lot of profit opportunity. So, you know, it's nice to get that little head start. I'll take a look at the NHL side of things real quickly here. One game tonight, of course, Pittsburgh takes on Tampa Bay. For Tampa Bay, you know, about the worst case scenario in game one with Ben Bishop going down, had to be stretchered off the ice. Seems like he's relatively okay. I'd be stunned if he plays tonight. I'd be stunned if he plays Wednesday night. Maybe we're looking at a game 4 or game 5 scenario. The MRI reportedly revealing no structural damage. X-ray is negative. You know, so we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, looks like it'll be Andre Vasilevsky here for Tampa Bay on Monday night. Pittsburgh about a $2 favorite for this game. And I will tell you right now, this line is too high. It doesn't necessarily mean that's an endorsement of taking Tampa Bay, but this line is entirely too high. You know, Tampa Bay won without Ben Bishop, for one thing. Another thing, Andre Vasilevsky played really, really well in that game. Stopped 25 of 26 shots. Of course, I previewed this game over at bangthebook.com, so you can check that out. But Vasilevsky is a guy, I mean, he's young. He's only 21. You know, but Matt Murray was only 21, too, when he started, you know, game 3 there against the Rangers. But Vasilevsky's played a lot internationally. He's played on Russia's World Championships team. He's played 3 World Junior Championships, 1 under 18. And those are a little bit different, you know, than the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I mean, it's not like this kid is, you know, inexperienced in terms of pressure. Maybe he's inexperienced in terms of the NHL playoffs, but he has played in some of those important environments, did medal 3 times with the World Junior team from Russia. So, you know, he's had success at the international level in big spots. I would have no issue with anyone that wants to take Tampa Bay here tonight. And as I talked about, you know, it's unfortunate that Bishop got hurt from a betting standpoint because Tampa Bay got game 1. You could have gotten a really reasonable Pittsburgh series price, but with Bishop's status in doubt, you know, really didn't cause as much of an adjustment as you would like. But, you know, for Pittsburgh here, they looked, even though they outshot Tampa Bay pretty bad, 35-20, they looked a little bit bottled up. You know, Tampa Bay really kept them to the outsides well. Tampa Bay dictated the pace and transition, dictated the scoring chances. You got to give them a lot of credit for that. I feel like Tampa Bay as a pregame position is not a bad idea. I mean, they're going to look to start fast, try to score that first goal, take the pressure off of Vasilevsky. You know, we'll see if Anton Stralman returns to the lineup tonight. Wasn't able to go in game 1. Steven Stamkos still not cleared, so those are 2 big losses. But also, you know, this is a surprisingly physical series. You had Ryan Callahan's hit from behind on Chris Letang. I'm surprised Letang got up. I'm surprised Letang's okay. He's been a guy that's had concussion issues throughout his career. So, you know, I was very surprised to see him get up and be okay. Also surprised to see Callahan not get a game misconduct for that and not face any supplemental discipline. But, you know, I guess the Department of Player Safety said that Letang didn't protect himself well enough. You know, I would say that that's probably wrong. But in any event, you know, we'll see what kind of bad blood continues throughout this series. Both teams scored a power play goal in game one. That's really what the key is going to be for Tampa Bay, is what they do at even strength. I mean, their power play has been pretty good here in the postseason. Jonathan Drouin's been fantastic on the wing, great distributor with the puck. Pittsburgh's power play, of course, we know about all the star power with that. So, you know, it's all going to be about even strength, what those role players do, what those depth guys do, because Pittsburgh's guys like Hagelin, Bonino, Connor Sheary, those speed guys, you know, they need to get it going against Tampa Bay's depth guys like Callahan, like, you know, some of these guys that aren't as fast. So that's the matchup I'm looking for here on Monday night. Again, I think Tampa Bay is worth a starting position, and then maybe you can play around with this game throughout. But, you know, I do feel like Pittsburgh a little bit overvalued here as we head into game two, and then we'll see what happens heading into game three. I'll talk about the San Jose-St. Louis series coming up on Tuesday's show with that game. St. Louis, a minus 130 favorite once again on Tuesday after drawing first blood with a 2-1 win on Sunday night. So I'll touch on that series on tomorrow's show. But we'll get back to the NBA side of things here. Bring in Austin Peters of Upside Motor. Austin, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing really well, Adam. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Appreciate it. Thanks for taking some time here once again to join us on the show. We've got the two conference final series and then the finals left to go. So the NBA season winding down, but a lot of exciting basketball left to come. Are you surprised by the final four teams that we have here?
No, I'm not really surprised. I think that a lot of people expected the Spurs maybe, but I know that the Spurs and the Thunder have always played each other close. So it doesn't really surprise me that they were able to win the series. I think the way that they won was very surprising, but if you would have told me before the playoffs started that it was going to be Golden State versus Oklahoma City, I don't think that anybody – or I wouldn't have been surprised by it. Maybe some people would have. And then Toronto and Cleveland, I don't think anybody's surprised by that either. I think those were clearly the two best teams in the conference in the regular season. And so now they have made it to the conference finals, and we get to see them play each other.
Well, we'll start with this Oklahoma City-Golden State series. Of course, Golden State, 7.5-point favorite here tonight for game one. The concern here for me in both of these series with the underdog is – you know, you can fall into, I don't want to say a level of complacency, but, you know, for Oklahoma City to slay one Goliath in the San Antonio Spurs, to have to go and do it again, you know, that's kind of a tough uphill mental battle to climb.
Yes, it very much is, but it can also, you know, maybe sharpen your mind a little bit, make you extra focused. You know, it's like, okay, and then Kevin Durant said it after the last game, it's like, this isn't our championship, we still – know, have two more series to go if we're going to win the championship, and we got Golden State next. And so that, I mean, that's just kind of the mentality that they have is, you know, we took down one Goliath, like you said, and now we got another one coming up, and I think it's going to make them focus even more heading into the next round.
So from an X's and O's standpoint here, looking at this series, obviously Golden State is a different type of animal than San Antonio. San Antonio shot the ball well in game one, didn't really shoot all that well throughout. Oklahoma City had a pretty big advantage down low. That was something we talked about and something we'll touch on here again. But the big thing for Golden State, you know, for defending Golden State is being able to defend out on the perimeter. I'm not worried about Oklahoma City rebounding the ball. I think they should be good in that regard. But, you know, do you worry about their ability to defend the three-point line here?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting, the contrast in styles. Obviously, everybody knows about Golden State's famous lineup where they play Draymond at center and they go really small. And then the Thunder really made a living in the series against the Spurs in their really big lineup where they played both Adams and Cantor together out there. And so it is going to be very interesting to see who gives in first coaching-wise, whether Coach Donovan gives in and goes small or if Coach Kerr gives in and decides to stay with playing two bigs instead of just playing one big at the same time. So it is, I think, you know, I'd probably give the edge to Golden State just because, you know, they've, for the last two whole seasons, they've been going with that lineup and it's had success against every single team and no matter what the personnel is. And you really got to just trust that Draymond and Harrison Barnes and Iguodala and those guys are going to have success when they're going up and rebounding the ball. against the two bigs of Oklahoma City.
Well, and it's kind of a catch-22 for Oklahoma City because you know that one of your advantages here in this series is defensive rebounding. If Golden State misses, they're not going to get a whole lot of second-chance opportunities. The flip side of that is if you don't go with, you know, Adams and Cantor out there at the same time or, you know, or some other type of lineup, you know, can you get back in transition if you have an offensive possession with a turnover or something like that? You know, how many clean looks is Golden State going to get off the rush, so to speak? You know, can Oklahoma City get up and down the floor with those two bigs out there? Do you feel like there's a delicate balance that can be reached?
It is. It's going to be interesting. And I think that that is, you know, you really touched on it. You hit the nail on the head. I think that's going to be a huge advantage for Golden State is if you do have those two bigs crashing the glass, especially on the offensive end, then it's really going to hurt their transition game, their ability to get back. And then you also have guys like Russell Westbrook, who every once in a while, he likes to crash the offensive boards too. And so that's one less guy getting back for Golden State's transition game. And we know that Draymond and Harrison Barnes, like I said, all those guys, they have the ability to hold up on the defensive glass against any sort of lineup, big or small. And so that could really, really hurt the Thunder and could, you know, when we know that once Golden State, when they get out and run in transition, they can put up, you know, 8-10 points in a hurry. And then before you know it, you're done and it's over with. So that, like you said, it's going to be really, really interesting to see if they can take advantage of that. And if that is a huge part of the series.
So we're looking at Harrison Barnes on Kevin Durant, correct?
Yes. In their regular season matchups, Iguodala guarded him a ton. And Draymond even said in their media availability the other day that Iguodala was going to be the guy to start. And it's going to be really interesting, too, because Oklahoma City played Kevin Durant on Draymond in their season series in the regular season. And so it's going to be interesting from a cross-match standpoint to see if, you know, since Kevin Durant's going to be guarding Draymond Green, and then if they go back in transition, is Draymond going to be guarding Kevin Durant? So he'll see a lot of different people, but mainly I think it'll be Iguodala and Draymond. But to start, you're probably right. To start, it'll probably be Harrison Barnes will probably be his main assignment. But he'll, you know, like I said, in transition, cross-matches, and then late in games, I would expect him to just see a little bit of everybody.
So which matchup would you say Durant can exploit the most in this series then, depending on who's on him?
Probably Draymond, because he's a little slower than Iguodala and Barnes, and so Durant would have he would definitely have a speed advantage. Harrison Barnes is probably the weakest defender of the three, even though Harrison Barnes is still above average defender, very solid. I don't know if he has the mental capability to stick with Kevin Durant for a full game. He definitely has the strength, but Kevin Durant still has just an overall athleticism and length and just overall knowledge and mental makeup. His IQ is definitely overwhelming compared to Barnes, and just because Kevin Durant's one of the top, you know, five players in the league. And so he's a really hard guy to guard, and he's a really hard guy to stick with. And it's going to be really tough for Harrison Barnes. Iguodala guarded him well. And obviously Iguodala kind of, you know, made life tough for LeBron last year in the finals. So we know Iguodala has what it takes to guard somebody like that. But again, Durant, he's faster than all of those guys. And he's really an interesting matchup for Golden State, because I mean, you can't really stop Kevin Durant. Your only hope is that you can make life tough for him. And Coach Kerr said that in his press conference the other day. So it's going to be really interesting. He's going to have an advantage no matter who guards him in the whole league, or, you know, not to mention Golden State's elite defense. And so it's going to be interesting to see what kind of looks they throw at him and how they kind of load up off the ball, what kind of things they do to send extra help or to make life tough for him in reading the floor.
So on the flip side here, what sort of matchup is Steph Curry going to face? And do you feel like it's something that Oklahoma City can, you know, have a little bit of success with?
Well, I think that the first thing that they might try is they'll put Russ on him. I don't know if Russ has the attention span to kind of stick with a guy like Curry for a full game. Russ is, kind of known for gambling a lot, jumping into passing lanes when he shouldn't be, and kind of going and sticking his hand in actions when that he doesn't need to be doing, and kind of hurts the Thunder a little bit. So I think that he will probably be the guy that starts on Curry, but I eventually think that they will go to Roberson on Curry, because Curry in the past has had a tougher time on guys who have longer arms and who are good at like getting around screen, and Roberson is good at that. So I think that that's the guy that they'll go to ultimately, but coaches like to, you know, stick with the positional standards to start with. And so I bet Russ will be on Curry to start because of that.
Well, and then, of course, the X factor in this series could very well be Klay Thompson, who was fantastic while Curry was out of the lineup, wound up, not that he needed to prove that he was a really viable scoring option, because he has been, you know, for a while now, but, you know, I think that gave Golden State a sense of security there, that if, you know, Curry has a bad night, it's very hard for both Klay Thompson and Curry to have bad nights shooting the basketball. So is it kind of a situation where whoever doesn't guard Curry winds up with the Klay Thompson assignment?
Yeah, that's what will happen between Russ and Roberson, is the other one will guard Klay Thompson. And I mean, this is just my personal opinion. I think Klay Thompson's the best shooting guard in the league. I think that there isn't another guy who matches his level of shot-making ability coming off of screens while also being able to guard the other team's best player and shut him down. And, you saw that with Damian Lillard last round. And so he'll start on Russ. Coach Kerr's been doing that with really good point guards like the Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook types, is he'll put Klay Thompson on him. And Klay, you know, just like he did against Damian Lillard last series, I have full confidence that he's going to be able to do the same type of thing and try and slow down Russ in this series. And then it doesn't matter really who's guarding him. I think that Golden State's going to run him off a bunch of screens, a bunch of stagger actions, and he's going to be able to create advantages, and he's gotten a lot better at reading the floor and moving the ball, and he's a lot better playmaker and shooter off people give him credit for. And so he definitely is that X factor in the series, and I really look for him to have a big series as well.
So I'm thinking that you're, from what it sounds like here, you're definitely siding with Golden State, but how many games does this thing take?
I don't know if I'm necessarily siding with Golden State. The Steph, with him coming off of as bad of an injury as he's coming off of, he's not 100%. And then Draymond rolled his ankle pretty bad in their last game against Portland, so I don't know what his status is going to be. And so I think it's definitely going to go seven games. And at this point, I think I'm leaning with the Thunder just because of the injury stuff with Steph and Draymond. But I really don't feel good picking that. If the injuries weren't a matter, if the injuries weren't anything to worry about, then I would probably go with Golden State and six or seven. But right now, I think I'm leaning towards OKC and seven.
Interesting. That'd be definitely a huge upset to have the team that won the most games ever in the regular season get bounced before even getting to the NBA Finals. And obviously, that would be something that would get Cleveland Cavaliers fans very excited, because I don't think there's any. I'm not going to say there's no chance that Toronto wins this series, but it is a very, very small chance that Toronto wins this series. Cavaliers, obviously on a mission, 10.5-point favorites for game one on Tuesday night. Huge series favorite. Toronto's already played 14 games. The Cavs have played 8. So, you know, I guess really the big thing here in this series is, how much does Toronto have left in the tank?
Yeah, and, you know, especially with guys like Lowry and DeRozan, they've, I guess, played a little bit better in the last couple games, but they've just been so bad comparatively to how they were in the regular season and carrying their offense. And and with Cleveland, the huge thing for them is they've had all these days off to prepare and to watch and to rest, and that's key for a guy like LeBron James, who's going to be playing heavy minutes like he did last year. He was playing, you know, I don't think he'll be playing 45 minutes a game again like he was last year, but, you know, his minutes usually ramp up in the playoffs, and he's the type of guy who – is going to need that extra rest. So I think it's huge for them. And it really is going to be interesting to see if Toronto can really kind of clean things up from what they've done the first couple rounds and play a little bit better, play a little more solid. Jonas Valanciunas, his status, that's going to be huge for them, because Cleveland has some bruisers inside who crash the glass and really hard and can make life tough for you on the glass. And so, yeah, it's really interesting. from that standpoint, but I really don't expect this series to last much longer, and Cleveland will probably get a couple more vacation days out of it.
I think one silver lining here for Toronto is that Dwayne Casey may not be as overmatched as he has been, in my opinion, in the previous two series, because Dwayne Casey is a guy that's not really widely regarded as that great of a coach, and, you know, winds up going against Frank Vogel and then also Eric Spoelstra, two guys that are pretty good NBA head coaches. And Tyronn Lue has shown, you know, some coaching chops here so far. I mean, he's certainly done well for himself since taking over for David Blatt. I think he's been pretty good here in the playoffs, but, you know, still this is uncharted territory for him as well. So, you know, maybe that's a little bit of a silver lining for Toronto, but at this point with what they've had to go through to get here, they're probably just outclassed, and it really, the coaching thing doesn't even matter all that much.
Yeah, I know you and I have talked about that a lot. And before the playoffs, we talked about how Coach Lue is going to be at a disadvantage in every single playoff series that he coaches in. But I think it's helped that he's had, you know, one of the best rosters in the league. And he, you know, he has done a lot better than I thought. He's been willing to change up the lineups a little bit, play more small. I guess it might hurt them when they play better teams like an Oklahoma City or Golden State. It might come back to bite them when they're playing guys like Richard Jefferson out there heavy minutes. So they're going to be hurting for that extra wing player if they're going to be playing small a lot. But yeah, no, he's definitely improved, and you've really seen it in the lineups that he's been able to mix up and mix and match and throw out there.
Well, good stuff here on the show from Austin Peters at APete1993 on Twitter, contributor over at Upside and Motor. What's going on over there at Upside Motor right now?
Not too much right now. Same old, same old. A lot of scouting reports are going up because we're getting close to draft time. The combine was last week. So be looking out for that. I don't have anything that I'm working on currently. Have a couple ideas that of things that I might start. But definitely go check out those scouting reports over there.
Well, and of course, Austin does a lot of tweeting about the games and what's going on with those. So, again, APete1993 on Twitter. Austin Peters, Upside Motor, appreciate your time as always, man. Enjoy the basketball. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Well, some good X's and O's breakdowns there, particularly of that Oklahoma City Golden State series. You know, Austin does a really good job with breaking down the intricacies of the game. You see that in his scouting reports and also, you know, in some of his thoughts here on Bang the Book Radio. So I appreciate his time as always. I cut that segment a little bit short. I wanted to make sure that I could fit in Cole Ryan's Betting the Buckets during our live recording window. I'm going to wind up going a few minutes over here while I break down today's MLB card. As promised, my picks and analysis piece, I was going to cover a couple of games here on the show. So I wanted to make sure that I had time for that. But here is the Monday edition of Cole Ryan's Betting the Buckets.
Thank you, Adam, and welcome everybody again to another Betting the Bucket segment. We are down to the Final Four. The Eastern Conference Finals and the Western Conference Finals are set. It looks like it's going to be a very good matchup. It is go time, not only for the NBA teams, but for us here at Betting the Buckets, because we want you to be prepared to not only make money, but enjoy the NBA playoffs. So for today, we'll go beyond the box score in that Raptors game, talk about how well that they did. We'll take a look at both series, give out predictions on this series and which way we think they will go. And then, of course, I'll read between the lines, as I always like to do, and talk about the future of one NBA team, feature many members of the Buckets Brigade, my Twitter followers, and end it with a pick or two against the spread. As always, segment blazing quick with a pick. Let's get started. Raptors Heat, both teams started playing off the same way in this game. They switched on everything offensively. They got to the paint by any means necessary offensively. So it was a very interesting game early on. But a lot of things happened in the first half that really caught my attention. The Raptors are up 53-47. Lowry, of course, who had a monster game, and DeRozan both had 31 points at the halftime. There were some ghost fouls, some fouls that looked like they shouldn't have been called, but there were plenty of free throws for the Raptors. They really had many more than the Heat did, which led to a lot, and that's why really free throws and home court advantage, very important in the playoffs. I was talking with Buckets Brigade member Shane Sports at the half. He said, I tweeted out, by the way, if you haven't followed me on Twitter, at ColeRyan9, but I tweeted out a second-half play on the Raptors, which won in cash, by the way. And I talked about they were dominating on the boards. They were playing well all around. They were shooting a lower percentage than the Heat, but they were up by a lot, mainly because of those free throws. And that's what Shane said. He came out and said, they're doing very well in the free throws. He made an excellent point. And to me, it's home court advantage. It's a different scenario when it comes to the playoffs. You get a definite edge from a free throw standpoint, from a foul calling standpoint. And you do during the regular season too, but usually it evens itself out in the regular season. Not always the case in the playoffs. The Raptors now have to face the Cavs, and I'll get into that a little more later, not too much. So they have to be careful of a few things, and I think there's going to be things the Raptors have to work on. Obviously, they have a great backcourt. They're going to need bench production. The Heat had an ISO play with Joe Johnson that worked well. At one point, it led to six straight points, and the Heat actually grabbed an early lead, 37-36 in the second quarter. The Raps adjusted. They took care of it. They rotated, plus Joe Johnson is not the player he used to be. But they really didn't do well off the bench. In fact, they got little help from both teams on the bench. And I think that could be a big, big problem against the Cavs, because this has to be the deepest Cavaliers team I've seen. They are deep from top to bottom, and Toronto's great. And they finally learned how to win, which is huge. But the Cavs are going to be a big problem for them. And with that in mind, let me talk about the series preview, and I'm going to focus more on the Thunders and the Warriors. First, a moment of silence for my Spurs. Future on them to win a championship. Obviously, they looked old and got beat up bad. They're done. But this series is going to be entertaining, if anything. The Warriors swept the season series 3-0. All three contests were right around the All-Star break on either side of that. Durant had 40 points on 25 shots in 40 minutes in one game. And look, these games were close. Oklahoma City either led or tied in the fourth quarter of all three of the games, but they couldn't hold on, and there was usually a burst that made the difference in these games. And even, look, one game, Durant, Westbrook, and Ibaka, they combined for 74 points, 22 boards, 16 assists, but they still couldn't win. It really seems like the Golden State Warriors are going with the credo that who cares if the Durant-Westbrook pair puts up big numbers, they can beat them as a team. Durant has been great against a Warriors team who's number four on defense. He averaged 36 points, 12 boards, 6 assists in every game. He had a few more turnovers than they'd like to have. But it's really a team effort, and that's what Oklahoma City will need here. And it'll be interesting. And look, Billy Donovan deserves a lot of credit. I don't give him as much credit as he deserves, but he's a brand-new coach, not necessarily as a coach. He's coached forever, but in the NBA, of course. I really like what he did against the Spurs when he brought in Adams, Kanter, and Durant for a bigger front court, and they rebounded a bunch against the Spurs, and to me it was ultimately the difference. But that combination played just 2 minutes in one game against the Warriors. So to me, that's a change that you may see when these teams get together, because against San Antonio, like I said, they dominated. Adams and Kanter, they outscored the Spurs by 27 points in 66 minutes. So I think that combination worked. I think you're going to see it again. And I think it'll be interesting how it will change things. And it will also play into my pick that I'll give you guys in a second. Now, the Eastern Conference, the finals opening series price in Vegas, the Cavs are -1100 for the series, Raptors +700. Nothing to be surprised about. The Cavs have more rest. They're a more talented team. I really, really want to find out what's going on with Valanciunas and his right ankle sprain. My guess, he's going to play. I don't know when, but I really think they need him. And I really think their play, especially in the front court, has been improved against the Heat. That win against the Heat was huge for this team, because it's the first Eastern Conference Finals for Toronto, as you'll hear about all day today if you haven't already. But it really showed this team how to win. They were a team that once they had the lead in a series, they could not close the door. They could not seal the deal. They did it against the Heat. I think that confidence plus some good coaching will make them a very, very tough opponent for the Cavs. Now I'm going to go off the path a little bit and talk about another team not in the playoffs, because I really think it's important to focus on the future of all teams. And I'm going to read between the lines and talk about Larry Bird and the Pacers. In his press conference when he fired Frank Vogel — oh, by the way, Vogel had a sit-down with Phil Jackson last week to talk about the Knicks. Great hire there if it happens. But it looked like that Larry Bird's going to fire him because he wanted more offense. And I thought Hornacek would be the shoe-in to me. I mean, when he coached the Suns, the team ranked 21st in the league in offensive points per game, and that bumped up to 7th when Hornacek, when he took over. And if you listen to Larry Bird's press conference, he talked about offense, wanting a better offensive team. So if you read between the lines, you can figure that out. But They went with Nate McMillan. Good coach, by the way. Coached in Seattle, coached in Portland. He's got about a 500 winning percentage, a little over that. He led the Trailblazers with 54 wins in 2009. Not a lot of playoff success, only advanced the second round once when he was with Seattle. But the real reason to me he made this, not only a safe choice, he's experienced, he has ties to the franchise, he knows the roster. He's known as a disciplinarian, and that's the huge one. I'm going to go back to that same press conference, read between the lines. This is what Bird said. Time for a new voice around here. It's all about motivating players, getting them to play at a higher level. If you got that year, then it works. So although McMillan is known for defense, he really wanted a disciplinarian. He really wanted someone to hold the players accountable. The reason I bring this up is, A, I think the Pacers are headed in a good direction with this hire. I think it's a good hire. And, B, I really want you guys to know that reading between the lines, if you do it properly, will pay off. Now, I didn't bet on the new coach and who it would be, and hopefully you didn't either. But it just goes to show you that you can get a lot of information when you read between the lines. But let's get to the picks. We'll go with series picks. I'm not going to bet on the Warriors or Cavs, but I think both will advance. I'm looking at the Warriors to advance in six games. I think it'll go a little longer than they want it to. I wanted to go seven here, but I'll stick with six. I think the Cavs, on the other hand, will advance in about five games. I think it'll be a different series. I'm not going to bet on that one yet, and I'm not even going to make a pick on the game. I will put that on Twitter, so please follow me on Twitter, and we'll talk about it more. But I really want to find out the status of Valanciunas before I make a play on that. And for the Oklahoma City-Golden State game, I'm looking at that line. I see 7.5s out there, total open about 223. That's moved up to 223 and a hook. And the play I'm going to give out on this game is the under. It's going to be scary, trust me. It's the Warriors and the Thunder. All they do is run and gun. But I think that's where you're going to get the value. I wouldn't be surprised if this goes to 224. I think if Oklahoma City goes to that bigger lineup, and I think they will, I think it's going to slow the pace down a little bit. I think it's going to make the Warriors look to get more second shots, because if the Thunder control the boards, and I think they will, they won't be able to get those second shots, which to me is a big deal. Scary, scary pick. Please don't go huge on it. For a side, I'm going to really lay low. I like the Thunder, but I think it's too close to call. I'm going to look for a second-half play like I did today in, or yesterday in the Toronto game. So please follow me on Twitter, and I will hand those out as the games get to halftime if I'm watching them and around Twitter, which I'm almost always am. So please look out for that. That will do it for the segment. I will take the under in the Warriors game one. I will have more on Toronto and Cleveland for their first game after I get more information, and that'll do it for the segment. So please follow me on Twitter, as I mentioned, at ColeRyan9. That's at ColeRyan and the number 9. Join new followers like Travis Norman, LBK, and Velvet Elvis. Nice name, by the way. And follow me on Twitter, and you will automatically become a member of the Buckets Brigade. Brigade members and veterans like Dr. Uppercut, Dallas Hunter, and my buddy Colin, who always is about sharing his player props. Always plenty of information to go around. Trends, stats, who's in, who's out, odds moving. I've got it all right there. So please follow me and enjoy the Final Four in the NBA playoffs. And, of course, win big betting the Buckets.
Excellent stuff, as always, from Cole Ryan. As he said, to become a member of the Buckets Brigade, all you have to do is follow him on Twitter, at Cole Ryan and the number 9. So got about 90 seconds left streaming live for this Monday show. I'm definitely going to run over here with my MLB thoughts for the show. So my apologies to anybody that is listening live. But 8 games on the MLB slate, actually 9 games on the MLB slate tonight. One of them 6:10 Eastern, rest of them 7:05 and later. A lot of line moves so far today. We've seen Rick Porcello. This number actually peaked about minus 128 or so. It's in the minus 125 range now. Adam Conley and the Marlins went from minus 105 to minus 130 against Jared Eichhoff and the Phillies. I've seen a line move down in the Minnesota-Detroit game. Jordan Zimmermann, who is a regression candidate, so I definitely understand this line move, going down about 15 cents from minus 165 to minus 150. Kenta Maeda up from minus 185 to minus 200 at some shops. For tonight's Battle of Los Angeles. No, not the Rage Against the Machine album, but the interleague series between the Angels and the Dodgers. The ones that I want to focus on here on the radio show today, because I covered some of the other games in my picks and analysis piece, I want to talk about this game between the Yankees and the Diamondbacks tonight. We've seen a pretty big move on this game. Robbie Ray opened about a minus 130 favorite once the market decided to open a number on this game. This number has been bet down pretty rapidly. The Diamondbacks now sitting in the minus 110 range. You've got Chad Green making his major league debut for the Yankees in this one. 2-3 with a 1.22 ERA, 2.13 FIP in AAA this year. Came over from the Tigers. Pitched very well at the AA level. There seems to be a lot to like about this kid. I haven't really checked out too much of his scouting reports or anything of that sort. But, you know, pretty good strikeout to walk rates in the minor leagues. You know, a guy that hasn't really given up a whole lot of home runs. You know, seems to have fairly decent stuff. College product out of Louisville. You know, so this is a guy that apparently people are looking to back. You know, maybe they like the minor league numbers. I'm not entirely sure. One thing I do notice about last year in Double A, 170 hits allowed and 148 and two-thirds innings pitched. So, you know, that's definitely something you'll want to keep an eye on here, you know, with somebody like that. But for Green, you know, making his major league debut, not a whole lot known about him. You know, maybe that's something that can help them a little bit. But in terms of looking at this one, what I'm really looking at is I like Robbie Ray here in this spot. You know, I mean, you've got a guy in Green that you don't necessarily know what you're going to get from him. With Robbie Ray, you know, strikes out a lot of batters, misses a ton of bats. The walk rate's been bad. The command hasn't been all that great. Did give up 4 of his 5 home runs in one start earlier this year, but is showing some signs of some positive regression. You know, and he's got a very good infield defense there with Arizona. So if he can just stay out of the middle of the plate a little bit more, a little bit less hard contact. Look at his hard contact rate right now, 36.2%. So that's definitely a little bit higher than you would want. But, you know, for me here, looking at the Yankees, you know, they're down a hitter going to an interleague park. They're not a very good defensive team. This is a spacious outfield in Arizona. I'm not sure I'm fully on board with the line move. I think I would have to look Arizona in this spot. I know the Diamondbacks are playing terrible of late. You know, not really getting a whole lot of key hits, not really scoring a lot of runs. But in this particular spot against Ray, a guy that can miss bats, a guy that can be effectively wild, you know, I'd worry a little bit about the Yankees being down a hitter. You know, going out on the road to Arizona, the Yankees really haven't gone that far away from home so far this year. So I would look very, very small with the Diamondbacks. Definitely not one of my stronger opinions of the day. But another interesting line move here in an AL West battle between Texas and Oakland. This one, Derek Holland against Sean Manaea. Holland opened a road favorite in this game, and those numbers are long gone. Manaea is about a minus 120 favorite now in the market. And, you know, I certainly understand why we're seeing a move like this. Sean Manaea, an 11.37 ERA in 3 starts, 405 BABIP against, a 51.4% left on base rate. Those are stats that are going to regress in a positive way. 453 XFIP, though, is what's concerning to me, because for Manaea, I mean, when you talk about regression, when you've got an ERA that bad, giving up like 5 runs in 4 innings effectively amounts to, you know, some form of regression. And righties are just tattooing him right now. Lefties, he's been okay against, but, you know, just a kid that has good stuff, doesn't really know how to apply it yet. And a big thing for me is he's predominantly a two-pitch pitcher. He throws a changeup about 9% of the time. You really need a viable third pitch to be a major league starter. That's why a lot of guys coming up through the pipeline wind up, you know, getting moved to the bullpen, because they don't have that third pitch. They don't have that ability to get through the lineup a second or a third time. And for Manaea here, you know, he's getting ahead of hitters, but you can start eliminating pitches. You can start guessing. You can start cutting the plate in half, you know, because Manaea hasn't really shown the ability, you know, to throw quality fastballs. His fastball is almost 6 runs below average already on the season. The slider, you know what the plane of that is. He's looking away with it. So if it starts middle of the plate, you lay off. If it's coming at your hip, it's coming over the middle of the plate. You know, major league hitters can pick up on all of these tendencies. And Manaea, you know, has a quirky arm slot, and he's got the ability to get minor league hitters out. And I think he'll be a decent major league starter one day, but that day is not yet. And you look at Derek Holland, and Derek Holland hasn't been good this season either. Strikeout rate is down. The control numbers are way down. Not getting any ground balls anymore. Left on base rate below 60%. So things aren't going well for him either right now. 6.09 ERA, 4.10 FIP, 5.31 XFIP, 5.23 Sierra. So, you know, obviously Derek Holland's not a guy that people are looking to back right now. But the one thing about, you know, an elevated fly ball rate is that it really depends on where you pitch. And he'll be pitching at Oakland Coliseum. He was coming off back-to-back bad starts. His numbers are skewed because he gave up 11 runs on 11 hits and 2 2/3 against Toronto a couple starts ago. Before that, he was pretty decent. So, you know, maybe a mechanical tweak here or there, getting an extra day off between starts might help him, you know, work on some more things. So I don't agree with this line move either. Now, I don't like going against heavy steam. I mean, I know that I go a little bit more in-depth than sharp handicappers tend to do. You know, they're looking more at a power rating standpoint. I go, you know, really deep with PitchFX data and all those types of things. Even still, I don't like to go against the market all that often. But in this particular situation, I just don't see where there's value in Sean Manaea. I mean, he's just not throwing the ball well at all. And Derek Holland, you know, is going to a park that may be a little bit better for him because he is more of a pitch-to-contact guy. So, you know, I mean, Texas is a top 10 offense in baseball by WOBA against lefties. Oakland is not. Oakland has a 3.9% walk rate against left-handed pitching this year, which is just terrible. That's awful. So I don't really understand this move a whole lot. I think the Rangers, you know, at this price are certainly worth a look in this plus 115 range. Again, not the strongest of my plays for tonight, but I did want to talk about a couple of games here on the show, make sure I covered that. So coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll have Philip Rossman-Reich of OrlandoMagicDaily.com. Also, Donnie Kolakowski, DonnieKolakowski.com, should join us about 11:30 Eastern time. So great week of shows coming up here. Thank you very much for tuning in for the first one, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.